This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
All right, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the parenting class. All right. What I have noticed is after, like, post elections, right, there's been a lot of stress. A lot of people have written to me talking about how we can talk to our kids. There is a lot of incidents of bullying that has been happening. And so I really feel like this is an important topic. So I decided to discuss this issue today as far as how to deal, alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah, because there's been this collective trauma that a lot of people have gone through, that what is going to happen, that feeling of uncertainty. And I think that it's really critical that we address this with our kids. And I thought it would be easier to do it in a class setting rather than trying to address each person individually. And for those of those people tuning in that are not in the U.S. and they may not be going through thinking, how is this relevant to our issue? You know, bullying always occurs regardless of the, you know, political situation. So you could be somewhere, any part of the world, and you find that actually the first thing that comes to mind when you think of bullying is that they're going to school and some older kids are picking on a younger kid. But a lot of the clients that I have, they actually complain about bullying that happens within their family. Okay, so for those of you who are not in the U.S., this is going to be very relevant, because the bullying occurs sometimes with siblings. Okay, there's sibling. There is sometimes bullying that occurs and teasing that family members do to a child. I mean, just last week I had several clients who complained about the trauma they experienced from family members picking on them, whether it was on their looks, on their intelligence or lack of intelligence, whatever it is. So what I'm sharing with you is going to be very relevant, not just post-election in the U.S., which we're all focused on, but anywhere you can just become more focused on what to do, how to recognize bullying, and once you know that that has occurred, what you can do to help your kids, okay? So that's the aim. But before we start, did y'all decide to be sunshine at home last week? Did y'all do that? And be more, well, that the goal was to be more of a sunshine, be more sunshine and be fun and happy and all of that. That was our goal last week. So maybe, okay, you didn't apply.
I wasn't here, so I was okay. Okay,
inshallah, this week we're going to focus on that. Right. So one of the first things, and then prior to getting into the whole bullying, I wanted to talk about many people asking me about how do we explain this to our kids? How can we explain that he, you know, got elected by the behavior that he had? And I think we have to take it back to, you know, the Quran and Sunnah, that we base our behavior, we base on what is acceptable, unacceptable, based on Quran and Sunnah, not necessarily who's in power or who's popular. And we see that whether it's in schools or in societies, those who are popular are not necessarily on the right path, right? So I think it's really important to explain to our kids and teach them that we distinguish, just because someone who is famous is doing a certain act does not make it permissible. We base our behavior, our morals, our conduct on the Quran and Sunnah. And I think this is a very important thing, because a lot of people are saying, okay, well, he said it, so I could say it. I mean, there's just been an unbelievable rise in bullying in schools, in racist remarks, so many things that are happening, and somehow it's being justified because, well, our leader has said that. And so we have to be very careful with what do we define as acceptable and unacceptable. And I think in the Middle East, we have we're quite experienced in knowing that our leaders are not necessarily our role models, right? It's not a new thing to us. We can very easily distinguish that, okay, well, there's corruption here, there is lack of morals. We don't necessarily look to them for our behavior and our conduct, right? I think it's somehow new here, and it's a little bit shocking to people's system. But I think that's why we always have to base it on, you know, we do things and we conduct ourselves not according to what's the most popular thing, because what we see is that society is constantly evolving. What is acceptable or what is completely immoral, like let's say 30 years ago, what was completely immoral is now completely is the coolest thing to do. So we can't base it on popular trends. And that's why it's so important to base our, you know, our role models, our the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the Sahaba, the wives of the Prophet. If we make them our role models, then we're not swayed by the behavior of the masses. So I think that's a very important concept, and how we need to decipher between what is, you know, what is good, what is acceptable, and what is not, and also pick and choose. I remember one of the most important things that my mother taught me, being from a different culture, is like take the best of both worlds, right? Don't just abandon your ethnicity and just embrace everything here, and don't just demonize a group of people. It's just about seeing what is best in each person, you know, and take those good qualities and do away with the negative traits. And I think we need to be able to decipher that. Our kids need to be able to do that, because if not, if they're just swayed or pulled by whatever is in fashion or whatever is the popular trend, and they just follow whatever is going on around them, then they can really fall into a lot of problems. So having the ability, you know, to distinguish between right and wrong, that is a critical thing that we need to instill in our kids. And that's why critical thinking is so important, right? Don't just tell them, shut up and listen, right? Or just do as I say, not as I do. It's about, let's analyze this. Let's think about why this is not acceptable. Let's discuss it. Let's have a very adult-like discussion so that they get accustomed to the analysis of it. A lot of times what happens is because we're training our kids to just be quiet, obey, and do as we say, they don't have the skills. So when they get in a setting where they are where a group of people are telling them to do something, they'll just totally go for it, because they're geared towards obedience. They're not geared towards questioning. They're not geared towards like, let me analyze this, let me decipher whether it's right or wrong. So as parents, we really need to instill in them the ability to decipher between right and wrong, and how to stick to what they believe is right. And so that's an important concept to discuss with our kids, okay? All right, so now going to the bullying. First of all, let's talk about some of the signs that your child is being bullied, okay? What do you think are some of the signs?
Maybe they're down a bit.
They're down, right? So you find that their mood is down. Maybe they're withdrawing from friends, withdrawing from their activities, going to their rooms all the time, feeling sad. But that's like typical teenager will go to his room. So don't mistake in that for being bullied, but it's just the idea of seeing a change in their mood. What else? Right. So they may lash out. So they have been bullied. They're frustrated. They're angry. So if you find that they are, they're lashing out and it's uncharacteristic of them at you, at their siblings, you know, maybe breaking things, having a certain reaction, you have to kind of, instead of just getting angry, because we have a tendency to see a behavior and what do? We just are like, you know, cut it out, stop it. This is wrong. Maybe we punish it. But then it stops there. We need to dig deeper as parents. We need to dig deep and find out what's causing all this. What's causing him not wanting to go with his buddies when they're all going out to play soccer? What's wrong with that? He is overreacting to little things. Don't just end the behavior. Don't just end the symptom. Find out what's the root cause of this behavior, okay? So sometimes you can see that if his group's circle of friends suddenly change, let's say he just stops hanging out with a group of people, or he gets really upset after a text message or after a phone call, you need to inquire about these things, right? Many times we're not even in tune with what's going on, right? We're in our own worlds. Like so many of the young adults that I do therapy with, they complain that their parents are so consumed with social media. You know, we're always on top of the kids, like too much PlayStation, too much phone, but we are guilty of that, right? And so first of all, we have to be off our phones. We have to be in tune, watching, observing, and comparing. If we didn't know how they were normally, then we're not going to see a change in their behavior, right? So that's going to be really critical. And if you see that they are suddenly making very negative comments about themselves, so a drop in self-esteem, if you feel that they always criticize themselves, or they don't feel like they can do things where before they did, okay? So you have to just become in tune with that, okay? And also if their sleep pattern or eating pattern changes, if you feel that they are either sleeping excessively, like I just had this one teenager that I was doing therapy with, and she is so in a state of depression that she's sleeping almost all the time. Now, a parent needs to recognize this and see, okay, this is not normal. It's either excessive sleeping or insomnia, where they can't fall asleep. Maybe they're having nightmares and getting up. And so just being in tune with that, because that's one of the signs of depression. Okay, so a lot of times when someone is being bullied, they start feeling really bad. Their self-esteem goes down. They feel hurt. They feel worthless. Okay. If they start making statements like, life doesn't matter, or y'all will be better off without me, these are some suicidal ideation. People do it, unfortunately. I mean, there are many clients I've worked with that they have considered suicide, and because of bullying, and sometimes the bullying is in school, and I can't tell you the impact that it has. I think a lot of times as parents, we kind of belittle it. We don't recognize the impact that it has. And we think, oh, God, just grow up. Just deal with it. So what? They're teasing you. But it has a very long-lasting psychological effect, a negative impact. The number of clients who have come in for the fact that they have been bullied throughout their schooling, it changes the person that they are, right? I had one girl who was placed in school early, so she was younger than everyone, shorter than everyone, slower than everyone. And like for 13 years, she was just bullied by everyone in her class. And this has left her so broken, okay? So we have to recognize when, and other individuals who tell me that, you know, they were teased about their looks. I just had a girl tell me that because she was teased about her looks by her classmates, she wanted to do complete surgery, an extreme makeover. She is a beautiful girl. Like when I looked at her, I was admiring her beauty. And she goes, yes, I need to do reconstructive surgery. I need to do liposuction. And this is like, she hasn't even, you know, she's just in her 20s. So we really have to be aware of this. We can't ignore it. And the quicker we address it, the better results that we're going to get. Okay? Any questions so far? Yeah.
I have a teenager. So
how old is your teenager? 14? Boy?
Boy.
Okay, 14-year-old boy.
And I can't tell if it's hormonal or if it's just sibling rivalry with the little sister. Like sometimes they'll get on famously, other times they'll be at each other's throats.
Okay.
And sometimes he'll shut down and be in his room. So I don't know.
Okay.
And when I ask about school, if I ask specific questions, he does get bothered.
Okay. So you want to decipher between hormonal teenager, which a lot of times they have these behavior, right? They will go to their room, they'll act out, all of that. Or someone who has been bullied. And I think the important part of this is connecting with them on an emotional level, like having this kind of, whether it's friendship or that closeness where you can ask questions, where either they talk to you or they have someone else. And I think that's a very important thing. I know that friends of mine who are older, who have like raised their kids, they're all like married with kids now. But one of the things that she says, like sometimes when I felt like I couldn't reach my boys, they didn't want to share, they didn't want to talk, she would have someone in the community who was maybe younger, an aunt, an uncle, not necessarily an aunt or uncle, but someone in the community that they could connect with, and you could have them open up. Because a lot of times teenagers will shut down. They will shut down with their parents, but you got to make sure that you provide them enough alternatives, right? Younger, cool, older mentors that they could turn to, okay? All right. So first of all, one of the things that, you know, Allah tells us that we are going to be tested, okay? And Allah says, وَلَنَبْلُوَنَّكُمْ بِشَيْءٍ مِّنَ الْخَوْفِ وَالْجُوعِ وَنَقْسٍ مِّنَ الْأَمْوَالِ وَالْأَنفُسِ وَالثَّمَرَاتِ وَبَشِّرِ الصَّابِرِينَ. We will surely test you with something of fear and hunger and loss of wealth and lives and fruits, but give good tidings to the patient. This is Surah Baqarah, Ayah 155. So this, the khawf that is mentioned here, that there might be fear. And we need to address this with, you know, with our kids, that it's natural, it's normal. And but how do you go about dealing with this? So we're talking about a bullying that is happening sometimes with our children. And knowing that everything that is happening in our life is a test. So getting our kids to understand this is such an important concept, knowing that everything that happens is a test. And I loved this one time. I think it was, we had missed a flight or something that had happened. And my little girl, who was 10, she came and she goes, "You know, Mom, why, this is just a test. We're being tested," and something bad could have happened. I love the fact that she immediately went to that rather than being upset about the incident. We have to recognize everything that happens in our life with our relationships, with incidents, that it's a test, and we have to focus on passing the test, right? So as far as one of the first things that we can do for our kids is, If you find out that they are being bullied, is number one is listen to them, okay? Listen. I think that listening is an art that is not mastered by many people, okay? Very few people know how to listen. We had a whole semester in my master's program that taught us how to listen and how to make people feel like they are heard and understood, because that's a big part of therapy, right? If someone comes in, that's why sometimes they just feel good. You don't even have to have a sob, but it's like, I felt like someone finally understood me, right? So it's about making your child feel that they are heard. And one of the best ways you could do that is listen to them, hear them out, and also repeat what they're saying. This is a great technique, even with your spouse, right? When something happens, you hear them out and then you repeat it. And sometimes I find that in therapy, I will have the husband and wife, you know, I do marriage counseling and I have them repeat it. And it's very robotic. You know, I tell, "Oh, I hear you saying that you are angry when I don't call you," right? And it's very robotic, unnatural. I'm putting the words in their mouth, but then I ask the spouse, I'm like, "How did that make you feel?" It's like, "I feel great. I feel like he finally gets me. He understands." So even when it's in a situation like that, a person really gets that satisfaction. So we need to do that with our kids when they're talking, because a lot of times we're zoned out, right? My middle child, Karim, he has a tendency to talk and talk and talk and talk. And he'll say, and at the end is like, "Yeah, mama." And he's asking, and it's so easy, let's say, to tune out, right? And then not be engaged. So being engaged and repeating what they're saying is very important to make them feel heard and understood, okay? So try definitely to do that. And then, you know, having that gentleness with them, not dismissing, because a lot of times kids won't go to their parents because it's like, you know what? if I go to them, they're just going to be like, this is stupid, forget it, what are you talking about? Don't you know, like, kids are dying in Africa, you know, and or they just remind them of like extreme examples, meaning that your problem is irrelevant, it's stupid, get over it, right? We don't want to be dismissive like that. If they're coming to us, we have to have that gentleness. And Allah says in the Quran to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and if you had been rude in speech and harsh in heart, they would have disbanded from you, right? So it's about following that example, the prophetic tradition of being gentle, of being being loving and compassionate. That nature, if we can embody that, if we want to like follow the sunnah, let's follow the sunnah in being compassionate and being kind and lenient. Because a lot of times we're very adamant about picking up the sunnah, right? Yeah, maybe it's whether it's the clothing, whether it's the rituals, the way you pray, how you pray. All of these things, we're very adamant about the sunnah. But then what about the sunnah of being lenient? What about the sunnah of being loving and compassionate and all of these beautiful characteristics that made the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam so successful, right? It was his mannerism. It wasn't just, you know, giving out a whole bunch of orders. It wasn't just the haram police, right? It was about his wisdom and his compassion and his ability to make every single person feel valued, important, loved, right? So as a parent, let's follow that sunnah, okay? And so when your child is talking to you, you'd ask them, say, you know, what can I do to be helpful? Don't just automatically bulldoze over what they're saying and, you know, you go in and you take over. Just ask, what is it that, you know, what can you do to help the situation? And then and it's very important to be supportive and kind of, and be neutral when they're sharing with you. You know, that in the class I was telling you about, as far as how we were taught the listening skills, part of it was not overreacting to what we hear. Okay, so it's kind of like, as they say, put a poker face, right? Not be reactionary. And I can tell you, I have heard it all in my therapy sessions, and I don't show any reaction. So someone could say, you know, I took off my hijab and I went to a club last night. I'm like, okay, and then what happened? And what was your experience? You know, it's just very nonchalant, not being this, oh, because if you react like, oh my God, what is that going to make them feel?
Shut down.
Why?
Because you're being judgmental.
Judgmental, right? Because if you're like, oh, you did that? What is wrong with you, right? They're going to be like, oh my God, I feel so like, then they start feeling shame and they feel guilty and they'll totally shut down. So I could hear absolutely anything and I would just be like, no reaction, right? It's just like, okay. So what made you do that? What did you get out of it? What's happening? And when you do that, it really keeps the conversation going. And I remember actually when I was, I think I was in 10th grade, and I told my mom, I was very close to my mom. She was just like a best friend to me. And I said, Mom, I want to be able to tell you everything. So please don't react in a way that would make me stop sharing. Okay, so anytime, alhamdulillah, there was nothing, never anything major, but it was whenever I would want to talk to her, she'd be like, yes. She had a big smile, took a deep breath, and alhamdulillah, it was never anything, like I said, anything major, but it was just the idea of her wanting to accommodate and me wanting to make sure that I can share. And I knew that I would shut down if there was, you know, a reaction. So make sure as a parent that we're not overreacting to the things that they're sharing with us, you know. And then definitely don't blame your child, right? If they're being bullied, it's like, well, it's probably you. It's something you did. Look within, you know. Or you're just saying, because it's a very painful thing to go through, I think, that for those individuals I've worked with who have been bullied, they're extremely traumatized, right? And for you to say, to put the blame on them, they're a victim. They're a victim of this bullying. And when you make it seem as if they did something, you brought this on to yourself, you're annoying, you have this, then you're no longer their that you're no longer their supporter, right? You're not their champion. And we need to be the champions of our kids. So if they're experiencing something, don't belittle it, don't dismiss it, listen to them, make them feel heard, and recognize that they're the victim here. It's not something that they brought on to themselves. Any comments?
I have a question regarding this bullying. Like, if my child did something wrong and he told me about it, and as you said, I showed, like, I was mutual. I did not show any bad reaction or anything like that.
Okay.
So how do you deal with it? How do you correct his behavior and tell him, you know, what you did is wrong without being judgmental?
Okay, so if they're being bullied and you feel like what they did was wrong?
No.
It's not about bullying?
Yes.
Oh, about, okay.
It's something
right. Obviously, our role as parents is to teach them correct, appropriate behavior. We do have to teach them. I mean, it's not just about, oh, just sitting and watching. But it's just the way you go about it. It's the methodology of helping them understand that you're not just out to criticize or attack. I think a lot of times as parents, we have a tendency to just criticize, and we look for negativities, but then we're not as vigilant when we see good behavior. How many times have you seen your child do something that is good, or, you know, while they're doing their homework, while they're behaving, while they're having that sibling love between, and you go and you recognize that? It's rare, right? So try to balance it out, right, with recognizing the good things that they do. And then if there is something that needs to be corrected, it's the methodology of approaching them. You know, I noticed that, you know, you're doing this, and this is the consequence. But get them engaged. Try to, especially as they get older, I think getting them to discuss a problem, you empower them and you teach them the correct ways of resolving issues, let's say later on in their marriage, right? Because if they don't go through that process of discussing, and then let's see what is the good solution, what can I do, how can I fix this, if they don't go through that training, then they're not going to be able to solve their own problem. So instead of just correcting, get them in a discussion and let them generate their ideas. Let them generate that, because what I find is that even like, let's say as a therapist, when I get the person to reach a conclusion, or they come up with their own ideas or their own understanding, salam alaikum, they take ownership of it so much more than just being told what to do. Same thing with our kids, right? If they generate the ideas and the answers, they're going to take ownership of it, and they're going to follow through much better. Okay? All right. So the second thing is, you know, don't retaliate against the bully or the family.
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
The question was, can you apply the same tactics that we're talking about here if your child is the bully? Because you have to figure out what the reason is behind their bullying.
Okay. If your child is the one who is bullying, I think definitely you need to look within a lot. I mean, look within the family dynamics, okay? Because a lot of times the bullying occurs because of one of two things. One, they're modeling a behavior that they're seeing. You know, sometimes parents will lose their temper, take it out on their child. And so that child will learn, okay, when I get angry, this is what I do. So it might be modeling a behavior, or it could be from some level of neglect, okay? So they feel neglected, and so they are taking it out in a school. So I think it's very important to look at the family dynamics and find out, especially during those developmental years, what happened, right? What happened or what didn't happen, and then try to address those things, right? So it takes a little bit of more depth and more understanding when your child is causing it rather than being the victim of the bully.
Because sometimes a kid who's being bullied can turn into a bully themselves.
Right. What the sister is saying, sometimes the child who is being bullied becomes the bully, right, if it's not addressed, right? That's why we have to be so in tune with our kids, recognize when they're hurting, when they're angry, when all this is going on with them. The sooner you address it, the better, right? Because it's kind of like if your arm is bleeding or you, let's say, for example, you broke a leg. Okay, and you just ignore it. Now, if you go and you get your bones aligned and you get it addressed, it will not only get better, but actually a broken bone, that bone, once it's healed, is stronger than the other bones, right? So it's all about taking immediate action. Because when it's ignored, imagine never addressing a broken arm or a broken leg. What happens? You will always suffer from it. Same thing with emotional issues. Emotional issues, if they're not addressed from early on, I mean, that's why I'll have someone who is 40, 50 years old, and they are in so much misery because of things that happened when they were like 8 years old, right? If that was addressed at eight, they would have been, you know, that would have been just cleaned up, fixed, and they could have had like a much happier life. So we want, at least we can learn from this, right? Can learn from this experience. So don't retaliate against the boy, because we never should be revengeful, right? We should never be revengeful. Now, obviously, we don't have that mentality of, okay, turn the other, you hit me on the other side. It's not that mentality. But we also don't want to be aggressive and going after the bully themselves or the family. So make sure that you're not in any way revengeful when things like that happen. And then you have to, number three is coach your child on how to react. I had a high school boy who was very, very meek, very shy, and had what is called Asperger's, which is a very mild form of autism, very like socially awkward. And he was, of course, like the one who was bullied all the time. He was bullied and he was being hit. And so I asked him, you know, what do you do in a situation when they're hitting you? And he said with a very soft voice, he goes, I say, please don't hit me. I said, oh, come on. No one's going to listen to you. Saying please don't hit me to people who are bullies is not going to be effective, right? I mean, especially in a man's role. You know, I have two teenage boys. And, you know, I understand that things, if you show weakness, you will be trampled over. You know, so there, you have to, we have to train our kids to be strong, to be confident. And if someone is bullying them to stand up to that, right? I had to coach him. I had to coach him in like, you know, you react. You have to react. Like, stop it. You know, you got to be tough. You can't be like, oh, could you please stop beating me up? You know, that's going to make them beat you up more. Right? And bullies tend to pick on people who they get a reaction from. Okay, so it's either a reaction, and I'm sure you all see this with your kids and how like the older one bullies the little one, you know, they're teasing the little one. What happened? They say something very annoying because they want to hear a reaction. And what is the solution to something like that? In order to stop that, is like you tell the younger one, just don't react. Pretend it doesn't faze you. Pretend it doesn't, la, 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 you know, you just whistle. Pretend it doesn't bother you. And after a while, what would happen? The older one will keep doing it, no reaction. Do it again, no reaction. Do it again, no reaction. It's like, oh, this is boring. Move on, right? But what happens is that when the child who's doing the bullying, does the bullying and gets that reaction, ma, you know, or just screams or does anything, then they feel like, oh, this is fun. I'm getting, you know, some people get their thrills like this, right? So it's about, you know, either the way they react, either it's like they're reacting in a, like, not in the way I was telling you, like saying, you know, stop it. This is not in a strong way, but just kind of like whining or screaming or something like that. They also choose kids that take that bullying to heart. You know, like they're bullied and then they just like, you know, their shoulders go, and they totally internalize and they feel so weak. So they basically prey on weak individuals. And And it's really, and those individuals who don't stand up for themselves. I just had a client last week who told me that they were bullied for a couple of years. And then she finally stood up to them, you know. Finally stood up to them, and that was the end of it. That was the last time she got bullied. And most bullies are like that, where all it takes is a show of strength and just merely standing up for yourself. Because if you don't, if you just keep taking it, they're going to continue, right? So, and that's why. So how does a person, how does a child stand up for themselves? What does it require? What does it require? How do they have to feel about themselves?
Confident, strong.
How can we as parents instill that in them?
We need to be
supportive. We need to listen. But we also have to build our kids. A lot of times we're so busy, shutting them down, dismissing them. You know, if they oppose something, it's like we don't want to hear it. And if we are doing that to our kids, they're not going to be able to stand up to anyone. If we don't let them, not to stand up as in a sense of like talk back or be rude. I know, like in our home, it's a very democratic household. Now, as parents, it's much harder. Sometimes, last night, my husband and I were talking, we're like, our house is very democratic. You know, it's like everyone has a say. Everyone has an opinion. Everything has to be voted on. But you know what? Yes, it does take a lot more as a parent. It takes a lot more patience. It takes a lot. But guess what? We are, inshallah, building our kids. If my husband and I take the time to sit and listen and evaluate and adjust what we're doing, because we're telling you, you know what? You are important. Your values, your opinion matters to us. How many people do that, right? And so when we say you're valuable, you have something important to say, I want to hear what you say, that empowers them. Right. So then when they go and someone is telling them something, an opposing view, they can say no, because I've already been told. I've been validated by my parents. I've been told that what I think is good. I haven't been told that I'm stupid. I don't know what I'm talking about. You're making too much of me. Right. Because we're constantly doing that. And that's making them like smaller, smaller, smaller. And then a bully can easily take advantage of a person like that. But no way will a bully ever pick a confident, strong, happy person. They just won't, right? I remember this one client that I had. I always ask this in the interview. I always ask if you've been teased or bullied. That's how, be careful, she might get stuck there. Okay, because the bullying and teasing has such a profound impact, I always ask in the initial interview if that has happened. And one of the clients said, you know, like, no way would anyone pick on him, because it's just his mere height, you know, just strength, height. So you have to give your child, if they don't have the height, they need to have the personality. If they don't have the, you know, personality, they need to have something that empowers them. And we as parents need to be constantly empowering them to make sure that they can stand up for themselves. Are you with me? Yeah. Yes.
I was just thinking about this thing. Then also, we as a parents, we should have a balance too, because some kids I have seen, like, you know, in the school, like they are so like thinking like we are right. They don't want to listen. Like,
okay.
The right thing.
Okay. So absolutely. Right. So you bring up a good point that the idea of creating a balance. So yes, we want to empower, but not empower to the point that you have no say, okay? Because it reminds me of the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Is one of the signs of the day of judgment is that a master, a slave girl will give birth to its master. And I think this is what is happening. Many years ago, I didn't know, like when I first started studying the deen, that hadith puzzled me, right? What does that mean? But it really, you can understand what's going on now, these days, that so many of the kids, the two-year-old is the master of the whole household. You have the mom, the dad, grandma, grandpa running after this two-year-old. What do you want, sweetie? Oh, my God. Like, we'll chase them around the house trying to feed them. They'll do anything. Oh, we have to, like, we have to take them for a drive until they fall asleep. Like, they run everything. So, obviously, we don't want that, right? So, there needs to be a balance between empowering and setting limits, right?
But when they grow up, they become those adults they always want to, you know?
Right, right. There has to be a balance between, you know, giving them, empowering them, but then also setting limits and teaching appropriate. Like teaching respect, I think, is one of the most important things that we as parents can instill in our kids, right? And we have to act respectfully, right? Not just demand. I demand to be respected, you know? So, like, sometimes when I have couples come in for therapy and the man always complains, like, I want to be respected, right? That is what they want most. But it's like, okay, are you acting respectfully? Are you doing things that will earn the respect of your wife that says, wow, I really admire him. He's so amazing. I want to be, you know, I want to respect him, right? But a lot of times that's not happening, and it's just the demand for more respect. And sometimes we as parents do that, where we are just saying, respect me, and then we're yelling, we're screaming, we're being unreasonable, we're not putting the time, we're not giving the love, we're not doing any of that, and we just want that respect. We have to earn it, right? So if we teach our kids how to act respectfully, then they will definitely know the boundaries. They will know what is acceptable. We're having a discussion. This is where I draw the line. Some people, that line is very clear for them. Like, they know. But then other kids, you always have to remind them, hello, I'm the parent. You don't cross this line, even though I'm being friendly with you, even though I'm joking with you. But this is the line of respect you do not cross. You always have to remind them. I have one that I always have to remind, right? So two of them are that they just know. They just know. They come to this point and then they stop. But then the other one, we have to, like, always be like, okay. And you remind them of that line. But once they have that respect inside, then you can have these very open discussions without it feeling like they get out of control, okay? All right. So we need to coach them on how to react. And then we need to find, like I was saying earlier, we need to find either a teacher, administrator, a counselor, therapist, whoever it is to, if you find that they are really withdrawn and they've been bullied and they're not opening up to you, find someone else that they will open up to, okay? I had this incident where one teenage girl was totally just out of control. Wasn't listening to anyone. So alhamdulillah, when she came into therapy and she really bonded and she just opened up and she shared and just made great progress, but because she felt like she was in a safe place. I didn't blame the mom. The mom was like so fed up with all the lies, all that she was doing, so that she was so critical that she didn't feel safe to open up, right? So sometimes if we find that we are not able to provide them with what they need, or they just don't feel as comfortable, provide them an alternative. Don't be like, it's me or no one, right? It's someone in the neighborhood, someone in the masjid, counselor, someone that can that they can open up to, okay? And then the fifth thing is take your child's side. Be their champion. Be the one that you know they can come to. You're not going to blame them. You're not going to say you're the cause of this. Let them know that you're going to help them, that you love them, and they can feel safe. I can't tell you the number of clients who will tell me that they went to their parents for that support. They were saying this is happening, and they were just, either they dismissed them or they got mad at them that you somehow caused this. And so, you know, that child, imagine how vulnerable they feel. They're scared, and they're not getting the protection or the help that they need, right? So we really need to be careful about that, because once that happens, you're basically, you are destroying that relationship. If they feel that I cannot rely on my parents to protect me, because that's like such an essential aspect of parenting is to protect them from other people. And if you're not able to do that, they're going to be like, as they get older, once they're like in their 20s, they have their own family, they're not going to really want to have much to do with you. I've seen people cut ties. I've seen people who were brought up in really good households, but because something like this happened, they totally cut ties. They don't want to have anything to do. Because they're like, at the time when I needed support, when I needed help, when I needed protection, you were not there for me. And they'll never forget that. Right? Okay, and then get emotional support yourself, because if you're going through this, it's probably very difficult to hear your kids going through all this trauma, all of this difficulty. So see if you could find, like, you know, a support group, talk to people who've gone through this themselves, and that way and talk to your spouse. I think finding support within each other is also really important. And the last thing I want to mention is that find something your child is really good at and have him build on it, okay? That is one of the things that will rebuild his self-esteem or her self-esteem. If you find that kids are, let's say, picking on your child at school, find something, whether it's arts, whether it's martial arts, whether it's a sport, whether it's any kind of talent, writing, poetry, whatever it is, let them pursue it, because every time they succeed, it will build their self-esteem, okay? So we need to just, and that's why it's so important to look at our kids, their talents, and just really help nurture it. Not just stick them, not just live vicariously through our kids. A lot of times parents are just like, okay, you're going to do exactly what I wanted to do, but I never got a chance to do. It's natural to feel that way, but you provide options and see what your child is capable of. What do they shine in? And I think if you do that, then they will naturally be drawn towards those things. Okay? So those are the ways to really help our kids. And you know, like I said, don't dismiss your kids when they are struggling with it, because I've heard of so many incidents that more recently have been happening, and we just need to be there for them, support them, understand them, and provide the help that they need. Can someone sign on to the Facebook and read me some of the questions that we may be getting? Because I can take questions now. We have 10 minutes. Do you have some questions? Yes, do you have a question?
I'm not sure if you addressed this in a previous class, but have you already addressed kids who don't listen, who are very stubborn, especially younger kids, toddlers, and stuff like that?
We have discussed that in other classes, but how about right now, let's address some of the bullying stuff, and then if we have time, I'll definitely address that. Are there some questions? Let me see if they're... because it's tough for me to read through these. Let's see. Okay. What if your own child does the bullying? How do you deal with that? I think we addressed that if your own child is doing the bullying. I think teaching empathy is so critical. First of all, make sure you're modeling the correct behavior, that you are not bullying in the relationship, because a lot of times we may not recognize it. But if we are taking out our anger by getting physical or taunting our kids, then they're gonna learn that, right? And we have to teach empathy. If we teach that sense of empathy, like, okay, how it feels to be in another person's shoes, and instill that, and maybe get them involved with things that will soften their hearts, okay? Because I think bullying is a result of a hardened heart, right? So if we take them to, let's say, volunteering, doing things. I remember we had an orphanage when we lived in Egypt, an orphanage close to us. So we would go to it, and I saw the change in my kids as we went and we spent time. And the first time I had to let them know, you know, don't be judgmental. It was like a gradual training. The next time I said, why don't you play with them? Next time it was like read books to them. And then it created a bond, right? And this really, it softened their hearts to be more compassionate for others. So we have to create these scenarios where we foster the compassion, okay? Are there, Can you talk about positive affirmations for fighting anxiety and how we can hold on to our faith in the future? Okay, positive affirmation, what you're saying to yourself has a profound impact on how you feel, right? So if all day long, like people who suffer from anxiety, many of the people I work with are suffering from anxiety. So they're constantly saying, oh my God, what if this happens? What if that happens? And it's constantly creating hypothetical situations. I had this one very successful man in Dubai, successful businessman in his 60s, okay, but suffered from anxiety the entire time because in his mind he was like, what if I get into an accident? What if my wife, what if we get into it? What if I go bankrupt? What? And if you do that, you will literally drive yourself insane. Right? Because you're in this constant state of panic and stress. So first of all, do away with any hypothetical what if. I'm sure a lot of time now, where you know many people are living in fear. I have many clients who will not go out of their home because what if I get attacked? What if they say this to me? What if they do this to the Muslim? What if they, and you know what? Let's just, yes, be proactive. We can plan, but thinking and being anxious is not going to help anything, right? So it's about staying in the present, not creating these hypothetical situations. That helps a lot, okay? And saying affirmations are like, I'm going to stay calm. Everything's going to be fine. I'm a strong person. You know, just building yourself up, programming yourself for success, not for a panic attack. Right.
Also, you can engage in
dhikr,
you know,
Allah bidhikr. Dhikr is so. Ala bidhikr Allah tatma'innul qulub. That verily with the remembrance of Allah do hearts find peace. So we need to do that constantly. You know, if you have that connection to Allah, you have that rope to Allah, and that rope is nice and thick, no matter what happens, you're going to be strong. Right? Any questions? My son is talking too much. You can say he has mental problems, but he is not. Okay, so lots of times I say you need to stop talking, and this is why Allah create us with two ears and just one mouth, okay? He's 13. I'm very worried from either stop him or leave him to continue this manner. It's a good problem to have if your child is talking too much. I think the harder problem is if they stop talking, right? So if you keep telling them, stop talking, stop talking, stop talking, they are going to eventually, you're going to shut them down and you're not going to have a way of communicating. So, okay, I understand. It can be annoying sometimes. They go on and on and on. But at least they're open, right? So I wouldn't discourage it. I would not discourage your child from talking too much, because that is a good problem to have versus someone who just totally shuts you out. Do you see any other question?
It's not updating for me.
So. Okay. Let's.
Yeah, there's a sister asking that her kids get bullied by her mom.
Okay. Moms who bully. How many moms bully?
The kid is being bullied by the grandmother.
By the grandma. Oh, I thought the mom.
No.
So the bullying.
My mom bullies my kids. They are 15 years old. What is the correct way to deal with it?
A bullying grandma.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, and it's her mom, right? It's not the mother-in-law. Okay, that's better. Because a bullying mother-in-law is much harder to address. Well, I think it's, we always have to be, first of all, very, very respectful of our elders. They get involved because, you know, they feel that they know better. And I think it's a matter of maybe sharing with them in an indirect way, rather than correcting your mother and saying, well, this is wrong, this is not the right way to do it. I think it's like talking about, okay, this new thing you just learned, and sharing it from that perspective. I remember when I had my first son, I went to like 8 different parenting classes, okay, because I wanted to be, I'm serious, I wanted to be a and from nursing to washing to feeding, and you name it, I took it. Because I didn't want to just be, I wanted to be independent. I didn't want to rely just on my mom, which I love and respect a lot, but I wanted to know. And so I remember we had some different ways, different approaches. And the way that I would get it, get the point across was saying, you know, okay, I just attended this class, or I just read this book, and sharing it from that perspective rather than you're wrong, I'm right, this is the way we're going to do it, right? So I think approaching your mom from that angle, that this is effective, this is a new methodology, how about we try this, that'll be the best way.
But I think some moms are more intrusive than others, in which they stand firm and next to whatever they're saying.
Right.
So it's either my way or the highway.
Some
or
people
I
are.
Know the best kind
right,
of thing.
Right.
And there's a certain point of kindness. You're going to be just like, I'm just not getting through. You're going to start out very nicely, kind of.
Right.
It's just a one directional
yeah.
conversation.
Some moms are very adamant, my way or the highway. You're right. And you just have to respect that. And you have to, you know, basically counterbalance that. Right. I had a client whose actually mother-in-law was like that, where there was a lot of negativity towards the kids. And I just said, you need to counterbalance that by a lot of positivity. And that works as well. So, yeah, you can't expect to change people, especially in their 50s, 60s and on. Any other question? My daughter says she wanted to wear a dress because her friend told her, and she wants to wear it. So the idea that lose her friendship. How do you lose a friendship by a dress?
I guess they were deciding to wear a dress
okay.
one day.
Okay, can I deal with it and then help her? And she says, I have no friends at school, no one likes me, and she's a 7-year-old, and on my side of my friendship. Okay. It sounds like, okay, so what I get out of this is that there's some level of peer pressure, okay? So we all deal with some level of peer pressure, and we have to be very aware of that. And it could be positive peer pressure or negative peer pressure. Like I remember in being in in Egypt, like some of the positive peer pressure is like sometimes all of a sudden the kids decide, oh, okay, we're gonna do extra fasting, you know, and everyone does it and they're doing it, and that's a great kind of positive of peer pressure. But then there are other times the peer pressure is more about doing things to fit in. And in those situations, there are some things that are harmless, that I don't know what the dress was like or what they wanted to wear. But sometimes that is harmless, and other times the peer pressure is getting you to do things that are outside of your morals. And I think that is a very important thing to distinguish. And that's why we as parents have to make our kids feel so accepted. Okay, because I remember like growing up, I went to like from second grade, I was here in the public schools, and there was a lot of peer pressure. But one of the things that helped me through all that and I didn't succumb to it was because I felt I don't need to gain acceptance. It wasn't like, oh my God, I'll do anything to fit in. You know, it was that feeling worthy, feeling loved and respected at your home. Makes you look at all that and then in the end they end up respecting you when you have the strength and confidence to stand up for what you believe in, then they will they'll respect that. But you know, not never to feel that you have to do something. If there's a group of people that you feel like you have to do something in order to gain their approval, then that's questionable friendship. Okay, anything else?
Let's see.
It is tough. Yeah, it is tough.
And I think what you mentioned, I think that drives the point home.
What is that?
Accepting and really building that self-confidence at home, that, you know, your opinions matter to me. What you think matters.
That's
to
right.
me. You are the most important person in my life, you and your siblings, you know, and I'm here to support you, positive or negative. I'm here around the clock, you know.
Yeah.
You
when
be
a child
feels
right, when a child feels that they are accepted, there's no need to go elsewhere. When they feel like, oh my home is a source of love, is a source of comfort, is a source of acceptance, then they're empowered, right? And then they go out and then they can pick and choose who they want to be with. But when someone is void of all level of love and respect and they feel rejected by the family, they feel neglected by the family, they will go anywhere. I've had so many clients tell me that part of the reason that they got into a sexual relationship was because they just wanted love. Like the girl, she just wanted to be hugged, but then it ended up something totally different, right? So if we give them the love and the acceptance that they need, they won't search for it elsewhere. So that's the really, yeah. What?
For example, like, okay, I'm accepted in my family and I can do whatever I want.
Not that whatever I want. I never said that. Don't be
rude. They still love me, that I'm still their child, you know, this kind of mentality.
Okay. So you're saying if you accept your child and then it's this feeling like, oh, I can do anything and I can get away with it?
Not get away. I'm still their child and I'm still accepted and loved.
What's the alternative?
Like,
cut them off?
Not cut them off, but what do you do? Like, would that lead into this kind of thinking?
It would. So the idea is, it's very different to condemn a behavior rather than condemn the person, right? So they can do a behavior that is totally unacceptable, and you will not accept that behavior. But you don't abandon them as a person. Separate the action from the person, because that unconditional love has to be there. We have to make them feel that, you know, I'm there for you. I mean, I can't tell you the number of people they will, like, let's say they fall into error, they follow their temptation, they accidentally get into this relationship, right? And they feel like they're doomed. That's it. That's the end of my life. I might as well kill myself because my parents are not going to accept me. I mean, is that a good alternative? No. The alternative is you made a mistake. Allah forgives. You make tawbah. You clean up your act. I will help you get back on track. Now, let's do it, right? I've seen so many people reform themselves. And that redemption is what's missing in a lot of our parenting. We're not teaching them that you get a second chance, you get a third chance, you get chances. Allah gives us the chances. Who are we to say you're doomed when Allah is saying, no, you can correct yourself. Doesn't matter how you thought. Like this one girl grew up in a very religious household and muhajjaba, and then was going to college and got into like some serious relationships and got into physical relationships. And so she just felt so guilty, and the parents found out, and it became a big mess. Now, the good thing about the parents was that the mom, I don't think the father found out, but the mom decided, you know what, let's get her help, okay? So she sought the therapy for her, and a part of her was like she couldn't forgive herself because of all that was ingrained in her as far as you've made a mistake and it's over, you're doomed. And I told her, you can start a fresh new page, right? That was in the past. Now, from this point on, you make a commitment to Allah. It doesn't matter how many horrible things you did. Make a new start. And when you give someone that, you empower them. Because what's the point in beating yourself up and feeling like you're doomed? Because if that person feels hopeless like that, guess what? Like, I don't care. I'm going to hell anyway. Let me live it up. That is the mindset. That is the mindset. But if you say, Allah is forgiving, the door of repentance is always open, what happens? It's like, oh, I get a new chance. It's like a kid who is, let's say, failing. I had this. A client came in. She was failing every subject. Okay, and her mom was ready to, like, you know, she was fed up with her. She's so angry. I said, okay, let's make a deal. How about you get yourself out of all of these F's, turn these F's to any other letter, okay? And then we're going to negotiate with your mom, see if she can loosen up a little bit with the punishment or whatever she's doing. She got so motivated because she felt, I have a chance. What did the mom want to do? She's like, oh, I just want to let her have it. This is not exactly. What's the point? The fact that she's going to be hopeless, the fact that she's going to stop trying, is that what you really want? You know? So we have to look at the end result. Sometimes we're so focused on our feelings that it's like, oh, I don't want to be nice to them. And we become like a kid, right? We really regress. And we're like, I'm not talking to you. But we're trying to teach and instill values that will, you know, that will raise them, the tarbiyah, right? Okay, so I don't know if there are any. My 11-year-old son's school said he had ADHD and wanted him on medication. We have him tested, and the results were he was bullied. How can we help his hyperactivity in this case? Okay, two different things. If you have ADHD and then you're bullied, they're two separate things. So I don't think one caused the other. So it's very important to address whether it's ADD, attention deficit disorder, or attention, the hyperactivity. This has to be addressed, because what happens when it's ignored, your kids will have very low self-esteem because they're not performing well. They might get in trouble. So I've had some experiences with this that sometimes behaviorally you can improve it. Other times with a diet, okay? My older son, you know, he has it, and he changed his diet around. He became very, like, super healthy, gluten-free, paleo, and mashallah, it totally affected his concentration. So sometimes you can work with changing your diet, or, you know, there's some really effective medication that you take the medication, and the child does a 180. So that needs to be addressed. And then the bullying is a totally different issue, which I think all that we discussed today could be applied. Okay? Anything else? Let's see. Yes. Your daughter is 6 years old and she doesn't listen?
Yeah, she does. When I say she doesn't listen, she doesn't understand, but she doesn't want to do it.
She doesn't do it. How do you tell her?
I think that this is good for you because this is why you made our doing it. Even like we are doing homework, if you read this one, you know, you're going to get better and smarter, you know.
You know, there are, and I think this goes, I'll address this, this will be like our last question, but it goes to the point of strong-willed children, okay? There are some individuals that are very, very opinionated, right? And it's very... Yeah, right. With strong-willed children, you really have consequences, okay? My daughter is a strong-willed daughter, girl, and I find that the most effective thing is having consequences for. So you, if your homework is not done, you don't get to do whatever it is. If you don't do this, you don't get, like, that TV time on the weekend. Every single thing, it, like, has to be consequences without the drama, okay? Because sometimes we as moms become drama queens, right? Like something they don't listen. Some guilty laugh. They're like, they don't listen. And then it's just like, oh. So instead of having all that drama, just simply state what's going to happen. You do this, this happens. You do this, that happens. And just very nonchalant, without the emotions, and let them learn from the consequences. That's the best way. That's the best methodology of dealing with strong-willed children.
At any age?
At any age. Yes, yes. There's consequences. You know, try the positive reinforcement first, and if that's not effective, there is a consequence. And that is ultimately our job, excuse me, as parents. We have to teach that our kids, there are consequences for their behavior. And ultimately for the hereafter, right? That if we don't live a certain way, the ultimate consequence is not something we can take lightly, right? So we have to start from here. It is going to be repeated 1,000 times.
Okay.
That, right.
It,
I don't know what you're punishing her with.
Okay. Okay, so you take away, so you are removing some of the privileges, which is good. Yeah.
But that doesn't have it in the intention, right?
No, they have to learn that there are consequences to their behavior. You don't do what is expected to do, you won't get the privilege. And that's there's nothing harmful about that. It's actually good. Because kids who don't learn that there are consequences to their behavior, they just act out. Okay, so inshallah this was beneficial. So may Allah help us, give us the strength, the patience, the confidence to raise our kids with all of that, make them feel loved, feel accepted, feel a sense of like empowered, and guide us in all that we're doing, inshallah. Jazakallah khair. Assalamu alaikum.
اقرأ كتاب الله ترق جنانه وتن العظيم الأجر والغفران.